يقولون سلام سلام ولا هنا سلام.
You're listening to Middle East Analysis, a podcast series taking a close look at the Middle East, North Africa region. Hello and welcome to Middle East Analysis. I'm delighted to say that sitting opposite me is the powerhouse that is Dr. Harry Hagopian, a man that has been in the Middle East North Africa region for almost 10 days now, and in fact has jetted in, I wouldn't say specifically to speak to me about the Middle East North Africa region, but he has made a commitment to coming in to talk to us, unmediated thoughts off the top of his head. Dr. Harry Hagopian, how are you?
James, it's a pleasure. I'm very tired. I'm still, as you can see, quite stressed out. But it is a pleasure to be here with you again, to reconnect with our listeners and also to give you some extremely unfiltered impressions about a region that is very close to my heart and that, as our listeners know, is the Middle East North Africa region.
Now, I have to say, because our listeners cannot see this, you are looking rather tired, but I'm not going to give you any get-out clauses because your analysis and commentary is very sharp anyway. So I want to start with something you've put on your epectarsis.net website in recent times. I think actually whilst you were away, which is good. The position of Turkey, Ottomanism versus Erdoganism. I like that. I do like that a lot. The particular context of Turkey in the wider MENA region. Tell us a little bit about what motivated you to write that.
It is very important. And interestingly enough, James, and although this would sound very much like a plug, it actually went out as a blog on Huffington Post and was then replicated on my own Epictasis website. The reason I wrote about Turkey is because we keep on talking about the same countries, Syria, Egypt, Libya, the countries that are in the throes of change. And we don't talk about those actors that are also very, very critical and key to the whole region, but not in terms of the violence, but in terms of how they are managing the violence around them. And of course, Turkey is a very important country. It is important, first of all, because it borders Syria. It is important because it has well over 500,000 refugees itself. It opened its doors and its borders to all those refugees who are fleeing Syria since the start of the uprisings. And therefore, in a sense, it has had a very major say in how things happen. For instance, yesterday, I understand, while I was flying, there was a meeting of the London 11 here, where our own foreign secretary hosted a meeting of 11 countries to discuss what to do with Syria. One of those was the foreign minister of Turkey, Davutoglu. And the whole idea is, what is the role that Turkey plays? Turkey clearly has very much chosen sides. Turkey is now against the Assad regime. Prime Minister Erdogan and President Assad used to be very good friends. They even went holidaying together with their spouses before the uprising started. But once the uprising started, Prime Minister Erdogan of Turkey advised the Syrian regime how to react to those uprisings, what to do. And he felt very much snubbed because his advice was not heeded. And at the moment, there is a complete disconnect between the Syrian regime and Turkey. Now, Turkey, with its 500,000 refugees, Turkey as being a prominent member of NATO, Turkey as being a very close ally of the United States, Turkey as being very close to the rebels. And by rebels, we need to qualify which rebels, because there are, as you well know, and we've discussed this on our podcast in the past, there is a whole multiplicity of movements at the moment fighting against each other, fighting the regime, fighting the Free Syrian Army. So in a sense, all those together make Turkey very important as a voice in the region. Now, why Ottomanism against Erdoganism? Put it down to my being Armenian. But it goes beyond that as well, because as our listeners might, if they choose to read the piece, will realize, I do not at all mention the Armenian question or the genocide or anything to do with Armenians. I only talk about Syria and the impact of Turkey on Syria. And in a sense, Ottomanism, because there is a feeling across many political circles that Erdogan was trying to recreate a neo-Ottoman Turkey, whereby the influence it had enjoyed for centuries as the Ottoman Empire could be regained, recouped, so that Turkey becomes a very important player in the Middle East, North Africa. And certainly the foreign minister, with his zero problem principle, also wanted to contribute to this. So there was this feeling of neo-Ottomanism or Ottomanism on the rise again versus Erdoganism. And Erdoganism for me is Turkishness with an Islamist slant. And what you and I have discussed in the past is when we started, if you remember, and if you go back 3 long years ago, we always used to say the model for Islam and democracy in the Middle East, North Africa is pretty much Turkey. Now that has been a little bit shifted, polluted, changed, qualified. But still, if you look at the Middle East, North Africa, the only country where there is a sense of Islamism and a sense of nationalism, that would be Turkey. Hence my title of how do you bring those two huge political principles together, and in fact, do they work? And you know what? I'm not going to give you the answer to my question, so that you and our listeners read the article itself.
Harry, you mentioned that we've been doing this for 3 years. I think we had more hair when we started this collectively as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
When we look at Turkey, though, and this is my final question, is there that sense of suspicion? I mean, let's talk beyond Syria just for a second, in the wider MENA region, that Turkey wants its foot in Europe and to serve its interests in more of a pro-European way. Is there a suspicion as to where its true loyalties lie?
I think in a sense there are a lot of suspicions about Turkey, and those suspicions are not Armenian paranoias. So I'm not talking from an ethnic basis. I'm talking from the basis that because of those centuries of the Ottoman Empire, because in a sense Turkey has tried unsuccessfully to date to enter the European Union, we have only started these couple of days negotiations over a new chapter of its admission into the European Union, because it also has very strongly tried to look eastward toward the Middle East, North Africa. In a sense, what is very interesting about Istanbul and about Turkey, James, is that we always make this touristic slogan, this touristic publicity leaflet about Turkey having one foot in Europe and one foot in the Arab or Muslim worlds. And in a sense, it has tried to capitalize on that and try, in fact, to be important in both camps. And what has happened is that, in my opinion, it has failed to date to do that, for the simple reason that events have outrun it, outpaced it. Nobody knew what was going to happen in the Middle East, North Africa 3 years ago. People were more optimistic about the European Union qualifier a few years ago. So at the moment, I think there are stumbling blocks on both sides for Turkey. Hence, I come back to my question marks both on Ottomanism and Erdoganism. And of course, all this in the reality that we call our global village, the world, within which Middle East, North Africa has a very prominent, albeit unfortunately violent, posture at the moment. There are people who are suspicious, not least the Arabs, not least the Muslims, because they were occupied by Ottoman Turks. So they have a very bitter taste in their mouths about what could happen with Turkish nationalism gone rampant. And in that sense, these are all the things that are coming together, and I'm trying to mull over them and share them with you today while I'm still half asleep, James.
Well, I tell you, we appreciate you coming in whatever state, and I might even dig out that song, Istanbul, not Constantinople. I can have a little look for that. Thanks ever so much, Dr. Harry Hagopian.
You get me into trouble with the Armenians there.